Hi everybody, Steve Savitsky. Welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And today I have Devorah Miller. And Devorah actually wrote a very nice article for the Jewish Action, the winter edition. It's called Just Between Us, Bringing Up a Mensch, How to Raise Respectful Children. Well, Devorah, that sounds like quite a topic.
I think it's what we all want to know.
So, we all want to know, and we all kind of yearn for. I mean, there's no question about it. And I guess in reading the article, you were starting to talk about how your son belonged to the Boy Scouts and how you started to notice that he was becoming more respectful and was doing things. And he said it's part of being a scout. And you started saying to yourself, well, shouldn't he be learning that from Torah values? Was that the derivation of it?
Or at least quoting the Torah, I guess, you know, the idea that he quoted the Scout Law, which, you know, we're very happy to follow the Scout Law, but it sort of felt a little bit uncomfortable that after all these years of chinuch, he's not saying, you know, well, there's a mitzvah of kibud av v'aim, or, you know, v'yahavta l'reacha kamocha, or, you know, everything we've been instilling for years. So that
right.
was the,
so...
yeah, that's the gist of the beginning.
So why do you think he was willing to do this when he became a Boy Scout, but not so much when he was just learning in yeshiva and a student?
You know, I think, thank God, over the years, right, we have seen, you know, much less behavior from all of our children, and this one also. It wasn't so much that this was the first time we saw this behavior in him, but I believe that the scouts, the experience of being a scout really reinforced in him what we had been saying and reminding him and encouraging him and, you know, just the way that we've been trying to bring up our kids all along. So it was just something from the outside that I think really reinforced that.
Okay. Now, I mean, being a mensch, I guess there are a lot of different definitions of what it means to be a mensch. So since you're now the expert, because you wrote the article and you've been an educator for many years, what's your definition of a mensch?
My definition of a mensch. I believe that a mensch is someone who is responsible, who is consciously aware that his or her behavior represents the concept of Kiddush Hashem. I mean, that's a very, you know, a very Jewish way to say it, but that's really ultimately what it is.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you another question, not before we even really get to the topic, but I know I hear this all the time when people tell me, and now, I don't know what out of town means, okay, because out of town means a lot of things to a lot of different people, but sometimes I hear in the greater New York area, the kids who grow up out of town somehow turn out to be more of a mensch. Why do you, first of all, is that true? And if it is true, why?
We do hear that, don't we? I think, well, it seems to be out of town means out of New York. That apparently
right.
seems to be what town is. You know, I think that there are basic values that parents hold, and I don't know so much whether it's in town or out of town, but I think it really depends on the values that that the parents hold. And I think sometimes being, quote-unquote, in town or, you know, where things are very, very busy and there's sort of this rush to get ahead, whether it's, you know, financially or academically, I think some of those obstacles just loom larger, maybe in bigger cities. That's just a thought. But certainly you do find menschlich people in, you know, in town, and certainly you find people
struggle. Of course, no question about it. So in the article, you basically talk about, I guess, four different reasons that maybe it's harder to have kids who grow up to be a mensch. And, you know, the four, I really want to concentrate on those four. So let's take the first one. You say parents are busy and tired. Okay, so what do you mean by that?
We are. We are busy and tired. You know, most of us have homes where both parents are working, and we are rushing around, and we don't necessarily take the time to slow down enough to parent our children properly. And I don't think that this is something new necessarily. I think people like to say, oh, we're so busy, we're much more busy than people were before. It's possible. But I do think that, you know, whether it was a challenge before or not, it is definitely a very big challenge today. There's, you know, we're constantly, we're always available, you know, with cell phones and email, and, you know, everyone has everything on their, you know, on their, everything really is on their phone. And I think that we actually need to take a step back and remind ourselves of why we had children, why we have children, and that we need to take control of parenting them properly, that it's not just going to happen. So I don't know if I'm answering your question exactly, but
as you said, Devorah, I mean, you know, today somehow because of the financial strains, I mean, more people have to have two family incomes. So what is someone supposed to do? I mean, they have no choice.
I think we need to remember that it doesn't excuse us from parenting our children. You know, we need to look at our lives and say, what am I so busy with that I'm not taking the time to set and to, you know, follow through with consequences necessary in raising mental children. So, you know, I can't explain to you exactly why, you know, what one person could do or someone else could do, but we certainly can take a look at our lives and say, where can I slow down so that I can put in what's necessary here? Because this is not something we can sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, you know, sometimes I hear people tell me, and I think they may have it wrong. I think they're kind of the inverse logic. They tell me, well, now my kids are more grown, or they're grown up, and so now I could afford to go back to work and so on. And I always say to them, I mean, you have teenage kids. Probably they need you more now than ever did before.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't seem to make sense to me. I don't know. Am I missing something?
I think our children always need us, but in different ways. You know, in certain ways, I find as my children are getting older, so I need to be less physically involved. You know, there's not the diaper changing and the getting them dressed and everything like that. But I do think we need to be more emotionally available, and that's also about slowing down. You know, we can't expect to build a relationship with our child if we're not available to respond and to listen to them. You know, it's funny. I was actually in I think this is a book from the 80s, actually, called To Raise a Mensch, or Raising a Mensch, by Neil Kershaw, I think, wrote it. And he talks about how his wife used to like coming home when she was a teenager just so that she could ignore her mother. You know, she wanted her mother to be there so that she didn't have to pay attention to her. But there's a security.
Okay.
there's definitely a security that a teenager has in knowing that their parent is available to them. So, again, we might have a little more time on our hands, but we also need to consider the fact that we need to be available as in any relationship. We need to.
Okay. And then you mentioned also, you mentioned that the media breeds disrespect. So what do you mean by that?
I mean, I was specifically focusing on, you know, TV shows the kids watch or movies where, you know, the hero is, you know, a kid with a quick wit who's smarter than the adults, and a lot of comments come out and attitudes come out that are just not respectful. And I think we need to be aware of that. In the same way that when we notice behavior that we don't appreciate or we don't want to tolerate, and our children are there, we want to point out to them that's not okay. I know with my younger children, when I read books to them, and sometimes it'll come up that a character is not respectful, I'll say, you know, that's not respectful, right? That's not how we speak. So just being aware of what our children are exposed to can help us either to make sure that they're not exposed to that, you know, to say no to that show or that movie or whatever it is. But at the very least, to be able to point out to them that's not okay. We don't speak that way. We don't behave that way. And this is the way that a mensch does behave. That idea.
And I guess you talk about, you know, even like going to the library and monitoring, you know, the things that they're taking out, or just you don't let them roam around and watch whatever they want or read whatever they want. You have to be a parent. That's what it is. It's a responsibility, right?
Exactly. I mean, clearly today can apply to the internet, you know, any of us who have internet at home, you know, we don't just give your child free rein from young age to see and do whatever they want. You know, we need to teach them how to use it responsibly and find what's going to help them to ultimately grow into a responsible adult.
Okay. So we've had two of the four, and now you say another one, which is our kids don't see enough real life examples. This is probably the most important thing there. They're in the home, they see how the husband and wife interact, the mother and father interact, and that's where they learn their behavior from, right?
Right, 100%. I mean, they do have a lot of teachers, you know, siblings and friends and, you know, any media that they're exposed to. But ultimately, the parents are the most profound. And the way that husband and wife treat each other is, you know, cannot be understated, the importance of our own menschlichkeit, and then in the way that we treat them and the way that we expect them to treat each other. And all of these expectations, especially when they're younger, need to come with consequences, follow through. Yes, the way they see parents treat each other is certainly what they will strive to do. But then, you know, they're in school for a long time every day. So we want them to be in a school where, you know, they see the teachers treating each other respectfully and the teachers treat them with respect and students treat the teachers with respect. And there's some sort of follow through in terms of how students treat each other. School is a big part. And then I think I also mentioned some, extracurricular.
Right. But let's say you talk about the home, which is the most important environment. I mean, so a husband and wife will always have certain disagreements. So what's the secret that you, what do you do in your house to,
I mean, I've been,
I mean, I know you're a husband, so I know that you never ever argue. But I'm saying in the rare occasion that you might, I mean, how do you do it in a respectful way so that the kids don't get the wrong impression?
Right. So, you know, this is no secret, and I'm sure you do the same thing. It's important for children to know that people do disagree. You know, certainly our older kids would probably be able to say exactly where my husband and I disagree and how we're very different. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I think it's important for children to know that we have different views or different ways of approaching things. But it's all about the way that we do it. When we see each other as part of this shalom, you know, we want to create this shalom bias. When we see the opportunity to rise in our menschlichkeit, then whatever the interaction is, it's done in a way that's respectful. And what am I trying to say? We need to have our children see that we disagree sometimes, and we need to show them through our behavior how to do it. It's about the how. It's not about never disagreeing or never having an argument. It's really just about the how. And obviously, if we're really heated, that's not the best time to have it out right in front of the children.
But a lot of things you're saying also kind of fall into the category of good manners in a way. I mean, saying thank you, saying please, saying excuse me, knocking on the door before you come in, you know, playing sports where you say to somebody, nice shot or nice try or good catch or things like that. Those are really just kind of basic manners, good manners, aren't they?
They really are. And, you know, for a really long time, I just thought that common sense dictates that this is how people behave. But unfortunately, the older I get and the older my children get and the more life experience I have, the less I take for granted that people value the importance of these values. I think, unfortunately, other values, quote-unquote, get in the way of this. And, you know, if we ask ourselves, what do we most value? Or even, you know, sometimes when I'm speaking to parents, I'll say, ask yourself, what are you afraid that your child won't be? So oftentimes people come up with answers like, you know, orderly, comfortable, you know, financially comfortable, you know, academically achieved, popular from, you know, all those kind of things. And if that is what's most valuable to us, then unfortunately the most basic, as you call manners, the most basic of our human menschlichkeit just could fall by the wayside. And it's such a shame, because that's really what holds everything. Without menschlichkeit is really, you know, anything else that's on top of that will just fall. That has to be the basis.
Right.
So.
And then the last one was really, you say, parents are lacking in healthy self-respect. Parenting, you say, is not a popularity contest.
Right.
Okay, so let's talk about that.
So I think I mentioned that Calvin and Hobbes comic strip. Yeah, we're big fans of Calvin and Hobbes. I think that sometimes parents lose sight of what their job is. And sometimes parents think that their job is to get their children to like them. And that's very dangerous because, you know, little children, they don't know what they want. They don't know what they need. And we have to remind ourselves that our job as parents is to, as Tom Sturgis says, grow the tree we've got. Like, really know our child and give them what they need so that they can be menschlich successful, not necessarily or not only in the financial sphere, but good people, just good people. And I think
Right. I think that's a good point. I mean, you say something also very interesting, that you say that when you send your children out into the world every day, you say, I love you, have a great day, and be a mensch.
Be a mensch, right.
And that's good. I mean, I think that's good, you know, it is to be a mensch, because sometimes, you know, you put your kids in situations and they have to think about, well, what would my parent do in that situation? You know, what would they do if they're in that situation? And then if they do, then, you know, it creates the right kind of a person. To be a mensch is to be a person who's considerate, a person who cares about other person, a person who not just puts themselves, you know, in front of everybody else. That's what it's all about. So those are the four kind of elements that you've really said that, you know, you think will help somebody raise a child who's a mensch. They're not, I mean, you know, it's not, you know, rocket scientists. It's not like no one has ever heard it. But I think you put it together very succinctly in a nice way. And I think it's a very nice thing. So I think if people kind of follow the simple formula, the chances are that they'll have kids who will turn out to really be a mensch, which is probably the thing that a parent wants the very most, isn't it?
I hope so. I sure hope so.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, Devori, it was really, really great speaking to you. And I'm sure all the people in my listening audience are going to love reading the article in the winter edition of the Jewish Action, winter edition 2012 of the Jewish Action, Just Between Us, Bringing Up a Mensch by Devori Miller. Thank you and have a lovely, lovely day.
Thank you so much. You too.
Okay. Bye-bye.